Love what you hear? Be sure to check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/finishthefight for exclusive episodes, insights, and even our D&D adventure.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome back to Finish the Fight, a gaming podcast,
where we produce and develop the highest quality gaming research in podcast form.
I am your host, Alex Kendall.
And I am your host, Derek Baker.
And today we're covering a little bit of an unappreciated gem. This is coming from the same studio that did Sly Cooper. It is such a fun superhero-esque style game that I really, really enjoyed for the PS3. And of course, we're going to be talking about Infamous.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those games now that I think has kind of gotten lost with Sony having so many great exclusive releases. You know, this game, now it's almost been 10 years since its last release, so we're not really thinking about this in the same stratosphere as some of the more current things, like God of War, of course, Spider-Man just came out, but this is definitely an underrated one that I'm excited to talk about.
Absolutely, so let's get to it. Infamous is an action-adventure video game developed by Sucker Punch Productions and published by Sony Computer Entertainment for the PlayStation 3. The game was released in May of 2009. In Infamous, the player controls the protagonist Cole McGrath, a bike messenger caught in the center of an explosion that devastates several city blocks of the fictional Empire City. The explosion sends the city into chaos, while Cole finds himself with new electricity-based superpowers. Though the game's story follows Cole using his new abilities to restore some semblance of order to Empire City, the player is given several opportunities to use these powers for good or evil purposes in the game's karma system. These choices ultimately affect character growth, the reaction of the city's populace towards Cole, and finer elements of gameplay and the story. Sucker Punch developed Infamous as a change of pace from their earlier Sly Cooper series of stealth-paced games, and used a similar comic book-inspired origin story to help the player become more connected with Cole. The game's pacing in the introduction of new superpowers and ease of movement about the city by unconventional means were critical factors during development. The desolate urban atmosphere was inspired by comics such as DMZ, great comic, and Batman No Man's Land, also another good one. Amon Tobin was among the artists that helped to compile its soundtrack, which aimed to reflect the environment. The game was well received by the gaming press. It was praised for many of its elements, including the implementation of Cole's powers and climbing ability, and the game's mission structure. Reviewers commented on the repetitive nature of combat and enemies, limitations of the karma system, and technical aspects in the graphical display. Infamous was compared to and contrasted with Prototype, a video game released the following month which had many elements similar to Infamous. The game was offered by Sony as a free download as part of their Welcome Back program, after the 2011 PlayStation Network outage, and the game was followed by a sequel, Infamous 2, in June of 2011.
Sucker Punch Productions was founded in October 1997 by Brian Fleming, Chris Zimmerman, Bruce Oberg, Daryl Plank, Tom Saxton, and Kathy Saxton, who first met while they worked at Microsoft. Zimmerman was disenchanted with his career in Microsoft and wanted to do something different. He approached coworkers Fleming and Oberg and shared his idea about starting a video game company. The brand name was created from one of several names the team had unsuccessfully proposed as project codenames at Microsoft. Zimmerman shared the name options with his wife to get her opinion, and she advised the team not to use Sucker Punch as the studio's name. The team went against her advice since the target audience for video games at that time was mostly young men, a group which the name Sucker Punch would resonate with. After the establishment of the studio, the team began working on their first game, Seeing the release of games like Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey on PlayStation, the team felt they lacked the necessary skills and experience to compete with them. Instead, the team decided to develop their new game for Nintendo 64, codenamed Puzzle Factory. This first game was inspired by a computer game called The Incredible Machine and was to feature 3D visuals, but the plan was scrapped. Two of the founders, Tom and Kathy Saxton, left Sucker Punch Productions in 1998. After purchasing a development kit from Nintendo, the founders began self-funding a platform game named Sprocket. The team pitched the game to publishers when it was halfway through production, as they thought this path would pose less risk. Activision and Acclaim Entertainment were among the approach parties, but most of them were not interested. They also pitched it to Sony, the manufacturers of the PlayStation series of consoles, which declined since Sprocket was made for the Nintendo 64, one of PlayStation's competitors. THQ nearly agreed to publish the game, but that deal fell apart several weeks before E3 1999. EA once offered to sign a deal with Sucker Punch for a PS2 title, though it would have required the company to cancel Sprocket. While the founders were pitching the project, development of the game progressed smoothly. A total of 17 people worked on the game. Sprocket's production was nearly complete when Ubisoft agreed to publish the game after seeing positive press reaction to it. The project, which was later renamed Rocket Robot on Wheels following a trademark dispute, received generally positive reviews when it was released in 1999. However, it was not commercially successful, with Fleming describing the audience response as tepid.
Following the critical success of Rocket, Sucker Punch developed another character action game. The project, titled Sly Cooper and the Thievius Raccoonus, stars a raccoon thief as its protagonist. According to Fleming, the sight gag of a raccoon putting on a mask somehow seemed super funny to us. Learning from the frustrating process of pitching Rocket to publishers, Sucker Punch decided to approach a publisher first. Fleming observed that the most successful platform games at that time were the ones released by console manufacturers. The team approached Sony, who agreed to publish the game for the PS2. Working with Sony allowed the team to streamline its development goals since they were developing the game for one platform. As the game was developed for young players, the team initially worried about Cooper being a thief and if that would enforce a message to young players that stealing was acceptable. The writers remedied this by introducing Sly as a master thief who only steals from other thieves. Thievius Raccoonus are Latin-style words invented by the team. Development of the game lasted for 3 years, during which time Plank departed the team. Creative director Nate Fox described the launch of Sly Cooper as a tense experience for the team, as Sucker Punch was an unproven studio at that time, and they were unsure about whether the market would be interested in such a wacko game. Sly Cooper and the Thievius Raccoonus was released in 2002 and was both a commercial and critical success, selling about 1 million copies, well surpassing the studio's expectations.
Thievius Raccoonus' success enabled the studio to pursue a sequel. Fleming said that the sequel was about Sly and his companions collaborating with each other to pull off strings of big heists, while Fox said that it was inspired by Hollywood heist films. To help differentiate the game from Thievius Raccoonus, the sequel features improved gameplay and artificial intelligence, a larger cast of characters, and more open levels. Sly 2, Band of Thieves, was released in 2004 to generally positive reviews. It was followed by a sequel, Sly 3, Honor Among Thieves, though its development was rushed. The team only had 11.5 months to complete its production. Despite this, the game received generally positive reviews when it was released in 2005. Sly 3 was the last game in the Sly Cooper series developed by Sucker Punch. The success of the Sly Cooper franchise elevated Sucker Punch's stature as a development studio, although they wanted to work on something new in order to stay relevant. The studio pitched 4 projects to Sony, including a project named Nasty Little Things, in which the player character would summon little creatures from their tattoos and go on adventures with them, and a project named Uncharted, in which the player character must survive on an island filled with dinosaurs. Sony ultimately greenlighted True Hero, in which the player must make different decisions as a superhero. True Hero would ultimately become Infamous.
Now, as we know, Infamous was developed by Sucker Punch Productions, with a team of 60 people working for about 3 years. Though they could have opted to request the necessary funds from Sony to increase the team's size and finish the game in 2 years, producer Brian Fleming noted that Sucker Punch's iteration-based development approach worked better with a smaller team. Infamous came during the end of the development for Sly 3, Honor Among Thieves, as the team began to look towards their next game. After spending the last 6 years on the same stealth game genre with the Sly Cooper games, they wanted to make something that was more brazen and loud. However, as fans of the comic book motif, they decided to develop it in the direction of a superhero game, working with the idea of an origin story that would allow the player to experience the growth of the character. Fleming stated that with this slower development time, they knew they needed to develop the game for the PlayStation 3 and that the work needed to complement their previous game, akin to how Shigeru Miyamoto's The Legend of Zelda series contrasted his earlier Mario series. They also sought a project that would allow them to become familiar with the new PlayStation 3 hardware, but had enough commonalities to allow them to bring their previous work on the Sly Cooper series forward.
Director Nate Fox stated that much of the inspiration of the superhero story came from two DC comic series, DMZ and Batman No Man's Land. Both center on a city after a large disaster. The series also inspired the crafting of the game's grim take on the superhero genre. Fox further stated that the film Batman Begins was an inspiration for the game. However, any correlation to DC Comics' Static Shock was unintentional. Fox considered his own personal involvement in the Seattle WTO riots of 1999 as influencing the reflection of spending time in a lawless place within the game. Grand Theft Auto 3 was also stated as an influence, in that the team could easily see themselves as superheroes in the open world of Liberty City. Similarly, Spider-Man 2 was used as a model to demonstrate what it would be like to move about the city and answer random requests for help alongside regular missions. They had toyed around with a version of the game that they compared to a superhero version of Animal Crossing, and alongside superhero work, the hero would have an alter ego of property developer to meet the citizens' more common needs, but drop this and focus solely on superhero activities after about 6 months of work. The character of Cole was created to be a kind of an everyman so that players could then get into the headspace of what it would be like to be a real human being who has been granted these exceptional abilities. The team also avoided giving Cole an alter ego or outfitting him with a costume, as it would not have reasonably fit in with the character or the game's story. The story and cutscene animations were created in-house. The plot was originally written by Fox, who had also written most of the Sly Cooper stories, and reviewed by Fleming. As they continued to develop the game, they rewrote pieces of the story to reflect changes in the game, making sure that the story remained enjoyable. As the game became more complex, they brought in Bill Harms, a published comic book author who had previously written for Supreme Commander and other video games. Harms assisted with the story and in-game dialogue in addition to marketing materials. Fleming noted that the second half of the story underwent significant changes in the last 9 months of development. For example, when voice actor Caleb Moody voiced the lines for Zeke, he ad-libbed additional lines that the team found to be enjoyable, and they reworked the story to incorporate them. The cutscenes were created in a similar format to the comics that the game was influenced by and used to further extend the atmosphere of the superhero motif. The cutscenes were created by taking 2D art created in Corel Painter and Adobe Photoshop and placing them into artificial 3D stages built in Adobe After Effects to create a pseudo 3D effect that allowed them to play with camera placement and effects and addition of organic elements such as dust clouds and ink spots.
Darren Bridges, a developer for Sucker Punch, noted that they wanted to make Infamous about becoming a modern-day superhero, stressing the word becoming as the key motivator to show the growth of Cole from a simple bike messenger to someone with godlike powers. This led to instilling a sense of progress and growth of the character in all aspects of the game, including the story, the progression of the player's powers, and the variation and difficulty in the enemies that the player faced. The team initially brainstormed on what powers that the lead character had, but selected electricity-based powers for two primary reasons. First, the power translated well to a video game context, as it would be easy to conceptualize the aspects of electrical-based powers in terms of video game concepts such as ranged combat. Secondly, electrical-based powers could then be tied to the city that the player would explore, requiring the player to use the city's electricity as fuel and thus developing a real relationship with the city. Initially, the game was more free-form, allowing players to purchase new powers at any point during the game. But the developers found it difficult to create a challenging game on that basis, particularly as they could not design missions calling for specific powers that the player may not have at that time. This evolved into the scheme of presenting new powers to the player over the course of the game, with the developers created guide rules for which powers were ultimately included in the game and when. The powers had to be useful and add something unique to the game. The player would need a chance to use that power immediately after they got it, and the power would need to be enjoyable to use. The team employed frequent reviews of when these powers were introduced to the player as other gameplay elements were added to the game. Not all powers were necessarily offensive. The post-cognition power, allowing the player to see the psychic echo of a dead person of where they were before their death, was added as the team found there was an element of fun in tracking the echo through the crowded city.
Some powers were cut from the game. One power, gained through the evil karma path, was called Minion Eyes, and would have allowed Cole to control the minds of civilians and force them to join him in battle. Although the power was decidedly evil and very fun to watch, the team felt it wasn't useful to the game, though they managed to retain a hint of it in one of the evil side missions. Though the team had tested each of the core missions individually with the powers that the player would have based on the game's storyboard, they found that playtesters, who played the missions back-to-back, found the game lacked a variety of combat situations. The developers revisited all the combat scenarios from this feedback to alter the combat layouts as well as adding new enemies, a step that Bridges believes the game benefited greatly from. The ability to use Cole's electrical powers to ride along Empire City's elevated train rails was a last-minute addition during the last month of development based on a playtester's suggestion. Empire City was designed to marry with Cole's newfound superpowers. The city was built with a crime ecosystem, where petty crimes or calls for help were always occurring outside of the main story, requiring the player to decide to stop to help or not to resolve them. A portion of the team was devoted to implementing the behavior of the citizens of the city and how that behavior would change as the state of the city altered due to the player's actions. Climbing buildings was considered to be an important aspect of the game, both as part of the superhero motif and because it was considered fun to do, and Sucker Punch set out to make the whole city climbable. Many details of every building have been modeled to allow the player to climb the buildings, down to the last window frame, lighting sconce, and storefront. However, Fox noted that getting the climbing system just right was the most challenging aspect of development. One employee was dedicated to making sure the entire city was climbable. Fleming noted that during Infamous's development, both Crackdown and Assassin's Creed, two games with alternative takes on the climbing aspect, were released. The team felt that each of the game's climbing systems had their own strengths and weaknesses. To reflect the nature of change of the city as the player interacts with it, either restoring power or taking it away, the developers created a deferred shading rendering engine that would render the effects of moving and damaged light sources.
The karma system in the game came about as a result of the team wanting to include the judicious use of power within the game. Fox commented that they wanted to lead the player along a path of doing the harder tasks, believing that these actions were the right things to do. However, without the contrast of evil tasks that were simpler to complete, there would be no means of motivating the player to be a selfless hero. The team wanted to encourage players to think about the results of not only large decisions, karma moments in the game where Cole thinks of which option to select, but also every moment-to-moment action, such as considering the presence of civilians in the area around a battle. They arranged for the first major use of Cole's powers to turn the city's inhabitants against him, to encourage players to consider both sides. In this mission, Cole is given the option to keep a drop supply of food for himself and his friends, or allow the other citizens to share it among themselves. They found the most players who chose the latter, but very shortly after this event, the population turns against Cole due to evidence linking him to the explosion, forcing the player to run or to attack them. Fox compared the karma dichotomy to the differences in styles of Batman, representing good karma, versus the Punisher, representing evil karma. The former would use precision attacks to avoid harming innocents, while the latter would hurt anything in his path to complete his goal. To that end, they designed the powers in the game to reflect this nature. Powers acquired with good karma are more precise, while evil karma powers are more destructive.
In March 2009, Sony Computer Entertainment America released a trailer titled The Beauty of Powers, which was later released on the PlayStation Store. Early copies of Infamous included a multiplayer beta voucher for the then-upcoming Uncharted 2, Among Thieves. The beta started on June 3rd. Anyone who pre-ordered Infamous from GameStop received an exclusive code for the Gigawatt Blade's power, and those who pre-ordered from Amazon received a special Reaper costume for PlayStation Home, while those who downloaded the Infamous demo from the PlayStation Store and beat it received a Cole costume for PlayStation Home on June 18, 2009. Pre-orders from Game Crazy and Best Buy stores came with an early demo released on May 7th. Redeem codes were sent via email to several Oceanic PlayStation Network users on May 14th. The demo, which includes four missions, was made available to everyone else on May 21st. Infamous was released on May 26, 2009 in the United States, May 29, 2009 in Europe, and on June 4, 2009 for Australia and New Zealand. In July 2009, Sucker Punch Productions released an Infamous-themed space in the PlayStation 3's online community-based service, PlayStation Home. This space is modeled after and called the Abandoned Docks of Empire City, and includes a minigame based on zapping Reapers with leaderboard tracking and clothing reward items, and a graffiti wall that allows players to create their own graffiti. The Infamous home space is the first to broadcast media from the game's developer. Outso developed the Infamous game space for Sucker Punch Productions. Two Sackboy outfits for Little Big Planet representing both the good and evil Cole are available as an expansion pack for that game. Good and evil versions of Cole and Zeke appear as downloadable content for the multiplayer mode of Uncharted 2 Among Thieves. Cole appears as a guest character for the PlayStation Vita and PS3 version of Street Fighter X Tekken. Good and Evil Cole appear as playable characters in the PS3 title PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. Infamous, along with Infamous 2 and Infamous Festival of Blood, was released on August 28, 2012 as part of the Infamous Collection under Sony's line of PlayStation collections for the PS3. And in 2012, Sony Computer Entertainment America released the Infamous Collection to be bundled with a 250GB PS3. Uncharted Drake's Fortune, Uncharted 2 Among Thieves, a PlayStation Plus 30-day free trial, and the entirety of the Infamous 2 DLC.
Now, as we've been talking about, Infamous is set in Empire City, a fictional metropolis based on New York City, consisting of the Neon District, where most of Empire City's businesses are concentrated, the Warren, a slum dependent on international shipping activity, and the Historic District, the location of the city government. Each district has an elevated train system and a separate power grid. The game's premise is built around the partial destruction of the historic district by a mysterious explosion, followed by a viral epidemic that forces federal authorities to seal the only bridge leading to the mainland. A rise in violent crime overwhelms the police, resulting in societal collapse. As far as the characters, we have the protagonist, Cole McGrath, a bike courier, accused of triggering the explosion, which leaves him with the ability to absorb and project electricity. His closest friend, Zeke Jedediah Dunbar, allows Cole to hide on his rooftop, despite his envy of the former's powers. Trish Daly, Cole's girlfriend, abandons him out of anger over the death of her sister Amy, while most of Empire City's residents view him as a terrorist. While attempting to escape the city with Zeke, Cole is contacted by FBI agent Moya Jones, who offers to clear his name if he helps her find her husband, fellow agent John White. White vanished while investigating a group known as the First Sons, believed to be responsible for orchestrating the explosion. While working to restore order in the Neon District, Cole encounters Sasha, a former member of the First Sons, who, like Cole, is a conduit, an individual given powers by the First Sons. Using her ability to control the minds of others via a tar-like substance, she has formed a gang known as the Reapers. Meanwhile, the Warren has been overrun by the Dustmen, an army of homeless militants led by Alden Tate, the original leader of the First Sons, who possesses telekinesis. Kessler, the true antagonist of the game, is a shadowy figure who controls the First Sons and takes an obsessive interest in Cole and his powers.
While the basic story of Infamous remains unchanged whether the player opts for the good or evil karma path, some story elements change depending on Cole's choices. While making a delivery in the historic district, Cole is instructed to open the package. In doing so, he activates a device known as the Ray Sphere, leveling 6 city blocks and nearly killing him. Rescued by Zeke and Trish, he teaches himself to control his emerging powers. After using them in public to fight off a Reaper attack, the locals turn against Cole after he is accused of triggering the explosion, forcing him into hiding. He and Zeke engineer an assault on the sealed bridge, only to be ambushed by government forces. Separated from his friend, Cole meets Moya, an FBI agent, who persuades him to return and find her husband, John White, who was supposedly tasked with investigating a group called the First Sons. With her help, Cole restores the district's power supply, earning the attention of Sasha, who lures him into her underground lair. Cole defeats her, but the Sons abduct her before he can make her talk. Trapped in the Warren, Cole assists what remains of the police in battling the Dustmen. Alden is arrested and imprisoned, but Zeke's incompetence in guarding him allows the Dustmen to free him and massacre most of the officers. With Alden planning to reactivate the sphere, the two patch things up and confront him, with Zeke ending up in possession of the sphere. Giving in to his temptations, Zeke deserts Cole and takes the sphere to Kessler. With Alden on a murderous rampage toward the historic district, Cole defeats him once and for all in a bridge battle. Before jumping in the water, Alden reveals that Kessler exiled him from the First Sons. White, who turns out to be an NSA agent with no connection to Moya, reaches out to Cole and explains that the Ray Sphere is designed to consume bioenergy from thousands of lives and transfer it to a single user, making them a conduit. During their search for the sphere, Kessler publicly challenges Cole to stop a series of bombings across the district, ending with him being forced to choose between saving Trish or her colleagues. Regardless of his choice, Cole fails to keep Trish from dying. Determined to punish Kessler, Cole tracks the sphere to a remote pier, where he must decide whether to destroy it or use it to become even more powerful. Regardless, the sphere releases the last of its energy, killing John before disappearing into a vortex.
Kessler then invites Cole to join him for a final fight in the exact location where the game began. Displaying similar, if not superior, powers to the latter, Kessler comes close to killing him, only to be foiled by Zeke. Mortally wounded by a massive energy discharge, Kessler uses his last bit of strength to transmit a message into Cole's brain. In a final twist, Kessler reveals to be Cole from the future of an alternate timeline. While raising a family with Trish, future Cole fails to prevent the Beast, a malevolent entity, from destroying humanity. The Beast tracked down and killed Trish and her children despite their attempts to flee. Sending himself back in time, future Cole, adopting the name Kessler, seized control of the First Sons, using their resources to prepare his past self for the future to come. Cole denounces Kessler's memory, but recognizes that his actions have given his life a new purpose. Two endings are possible based on what rank Cole holds at the end of Infamous. If Cole defeats Kessler as a hero, he restores peace to Empire City and is hailed as a savior. Nevertheless, his estrangement from Zeke and Moya, coupled with his responsibilities of heroism, leads him to realize that he will always be alone. If Cole is infamous, he allows Empire City to slip further into chaos and disregards Kessler's warnings about the beast, believing himself to be the strongest being ever to exist.
The soundtrack is composed by the electronic musician Eamon Tobin, composers James Dooley and Mel Wesson, and electric cellist Martin Tillman, under the direction of Sony's music manager, Jonathan Mayer. Tobin was specifically brought on board due to his recent trend of blurring the lines between music and sound design, as exhibited in his then-recent album, Foley Room. Instead of using traditional instruments, the team sought to use sounds that result from objects that would be found in an urban environment, and using such objects in combination with other instruments used in non-traditional manners. For example, bungee cords were strung alongside a bass drum and strummed, and wire brushes were hit against a suspended tuba. The music was divided between Tobin, who worked on the in-game music, and Dooley, who worked on the music for the cinematics. The two worked together to make sure common musical themes were present in both aspects. Tillman was brought in late to the process to add the cello sounds, but the group was so impressed with his work that they remixed already completed pieces to incorporate his contribution further. Manchester Music Group, working for a nuclear-free city, were commissioned by Sony to produce a song for the game. The song was penned Silent Melody and was used in one of the game's promotional trailers. The soundtrack was released for digital download from the iTunes Store in May 2009.
When it comes to DLC, on December 10th, 2010, the Gigawatt Blade, which had previously been available only as a pre-order incentive, was made available on the North American PlayStation Store as a free download. It was released in Europe on January 25th, 2010. In the downloadable version of the game, they are packaged in. The Gigawatt Blade allows players to deal heavy amounts of damage with a melee attack. The shape and the color of the blade depends on your karma, blue being good and red being evil, red and black if the race sphere is activated. Once activated, you can use it on an enemy for one hit, usually killing them instantly. It has three upgrades that are available in the power store in the game that can be spent using XP. Each upgrade increases the damage dealt.
Infamous received generally positive reviews according to Metacritic. Greg Miller of IGN considered the title to be one of the best PlayStation 3 games to date. Core to the game's success, according to reviewers, were the basic mechanics of the game. Giant Bomb's Brad Shoemaker considered that Sucker Punch had nailed the basic gameplay elements, tying all the various aspects of the game together. The mixture of Cole's powers with the karma elements of the game were also praised. The powers and karma system were seen to bring difficult choices to how the player approaches battles. Both sides of the karma system were considered to be fun to play. The mission structure was considered a strong asset of the game. And according to XPlay's Matt Keel, the missions forced the player to consider the full extent of Cole's powers through their difficulty, but provided generous checkpoints to prevent too much frustration with the game. Reviewers cited the variation in side missions and how they related to the main story as positive aspects of the game. The presentation of Empire City was also considered to be a significant factor of the success of the game. The climbing and grabbing aspect was considered well done and avoided a frustration fest that other games with precision jumping generally bring about. However, some reviewers noted that Cole's climbing ability was too touchy, with the character grabbing onto ledges too greedily, making it difficult to fine-tune jumps. In combination with Cole's other powers, Miller cited the game as having the most original city traversal mechanics for an open-world game. The behavior of the city's population and how that was affected by the player choice in karma was also seen as a positive and as a constant reminder of the game's setting. The game's story, particularly in the second half of the game, was considered to be strong, enhanced by the presentation of the cutscenes. However, the quality of these scenes was seen to negatively highlight the poor animation used for in-game generated cutscenes and the quality of the voice work. Miller considered Cole's voice to be too gravelly for the character.
The initial hours of the game, before the player started to acquire some of the more potent powers, were considered to be difficult and maybe off-putting to some. Tom Branwell of Eurogamer noted the remainder of the game continues to have some difficult sections, such as sections where the player must defend a moving target against a large number of foes, and considered these to be repetitive and overlong. Branwell further commented that the electrical powers in the game are simply electricity-based reimaginings of standard video game weapon archetypes, such as shotguns and sniper rifles, and with this awareness, leaves the difficulty of the game up to the enemy placement during encounters. The game is also considered to be rougher on the edges in technical execution, with the lack of anti-aliasing and occasional pop-in rendering, as well as drops in frame rates when there was a significant amount of action on the screen. Infamous was released a few weeks before Radical Entertainment's Prototype, a game with many similar concepts, including a character finding himself with superpowers, a large open-world environment that can be traveled by climbing up buildings and gliding about the city, and several other comparisons. This led many game critics to compare and contrast the games. In his sarcastic zero-punctuation review of Prototype, Ben Yahtzee Crawshaw, who had initially praised Infamous as huge, creative, and fun, compared the two games point for point and determined that he could not tell which was the better game, and challenged the respective studios to produce the best image of the rival game's main character wearing a woman's bra as a tiebreaker. To his surprise, both developer teams rose to the challenge, producing said images and forcing Crawshaw to call it a near tie, edging out in favor of Infamous, though still noted that, like their games, both images created independently were nearly equal in the assets that they included. This rivalry highlighted the advantages and disadvantages of exclusivity over a multi-platform release. Gaming analyst Jesse DaVinci had this to say with, quote, "Due to near identical gameplay and quality scores, the Infamous versus Prototype case study presents interesting data to publishers when considering the sales bump a title could receive by choosing exclusivity over a multi-platform release." And just so everyone knows, with both Infamous and Prototype, Prototype was an Xbox game and Infamous was a PlayStation game. So the both of those respectively being on the two different consoles.
Infamous was released at the end of May, and the game sold 175,900 copies in the US on its opening week, recorded in May 2009 sales according to the NPD Group, and sold 192,700 copies in the US over the month of June 2009, the 10th highest selling game that month. In June 2010, Game Informer stated Infamous sold nearly 2 million copies. IGN awarded Infamous Best Story and Game of the Year and Best Acting at the 2009 Golden Game Awards. Infamous was also nominated for four other Golden Game Awards, including Best PS3 Game, Best Graphics, Best Independent Game, and Studio of the Year. On September 4, 2010, Infamous was ranked 5th in the top 25 PlayStation 3 games for IGN, stating that when Infamous was released on PS3 in the spring of 2009, it quickly became clear that this was unlike any sandbox game anyone had ever played.
And I think that did live up to it at the time. I mean, this was a very interesting take on a game. Yes, we've had origin stories before. Yes, we've had a lot of characters with electric powers. But taking it in the hands of a player and be able to make those decisions that, you know, quote unquote, a hero would have to make. Like, do I take the easy way out, which is technically kind of evil? Or do I put, you know, the world on my shoulders? Am I Atlas taking this on? Sisyphus rolling that hill up the rock? Am I trying to do this in the hardest way possible, but on the good path? So I think it was a very interesting game to come out. And it's always funny when you see like two games come out at the same time that are basically the same game, but different.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of those kind of come out with that.
Yeah.
So that is interesting to talk with that. So let's jump into it, Derek. As always, let's let the people know, what do we think of the game and why do we choose it?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting time in the video game console wars where you have not only two games coming out at the same time that are really similar, but you also have them on the competing consoles. And so that just creates this natural narrative of this is this game, this is their version of this game. And in reality, they're doing their own things. They're trying to make their own vision work within these video game worlds. And I think what's really cool about Infamous is that, like you were saying, there's these choices in the game, right? Where are you going to be the good guy who does things the hard way, tries to save as many people as they can and make good choices, or are you going to take the easy kind of selfish way out? I think that that's sort of like an era of gaming that was really popular when this came out, where we were trying to get more into games that had that choice. And we've talked about it in the past where sometimes it doesn't feel like a true choice because the end result isn't really impacted by anything all that much. This one is one where it really is a true choice. Now, what I think is particularly interesting about this is that they set out to do a superhero origin type game. And I think now we've all had the Marvel fatigue. We've seen enough of the superhero stuff. That's maybe the last thing in the world that anybody would want right now. Like, we've done the superhero thing. Like, Spider-Man 2 is probably the exception to that. But for the most part, people are like sick of superhero content. Now, Infamous coming out when it did, I think that we had had origin stories in video games where, yeah, it's like, oh, who am I? I'm a nobody, now I'm a somebody, and I need to rise up to the occasion. I don't think we're strangers to that sort of thing. But I think for the most part, like actually getting these superpowers and being like crazy overpowered compared to everybody else was sort of unique to Infamous versus those other things. So I think that just starting out with that, I think that that was a really interesting choice. What about you?
Well, yes, I like that option of it where it is the gritty realism of like, this is kind of how superheroes would kind of come to be. Like, we wouldn't just have these people who would automatically get the praise of everyone of New York for saving them, for doing this stuff, for being these celebrities. And I love the idea of like, they're not really superheroes. They're conduits. They're ones who have been able to like absorb all of this energy and develop those powers, whether it's like the tar-like powers, the telekinesis, like all these different powers these characters have into it. I love that idea of just how those powers came about. And it's such an interesting way to portray superhero powers instead of just, I fell into a vat.
Yeah.
Or I fell into, you know, a work accident, which is 95% of them. And so it's like, be able to take that same idea of the work accident, but it's like, this was just a bike messenger, you know, the dude's trying to like make it in New York City, trying to make it by, and it's just like, hey, open it, opens it up and sets it off and gets framed. I assume probably trying to kill the messenger literally in that same sense of it.
Sure.
But survives it. And then they kind of, you know, as the bad guys, take it and spin it and be like, he's the one who set it off. That's him. He's the one who did this. And that's why I love how the story builds of like having the main antagonist like fetishize him and be like, how do you survive? I want to know your powers. I want to know you. And I like that idea of it. And then, it, you know, kind of turning out to be you in that same way of like this whole thing that builds into it is such a cool multiverse-esque, you know, Days of Future Past type thing where you can go back and see how that changes and try and do it. And it's like, do you listen to yourself? Or are you like, nope, I'm just going to be a god. And I love the way that that's built. You're able to build that into the story.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that that's a really cool thing. And you could see the influence of comic books and the way that they just influenced this entire game and the way that the developers mm-hmm. really took that stuff seriously. I mean, that mission with Trish, where you can save Trish or Trish's colleagues, but you can't save both, is a classic Joker type of false choice. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that you could pick Trish and then Trish dies anyway, like that is a very, very classic Joker Batman story scenario, DC Comics story scenario, darker comics type of thing. I think in Marvel, they don't do stuff like that quite the same way. So you could, I just think, feel a little bit more of the grittiness that they were really going for in Infamous, especially with like the darker, like this is supposed to be like Gotham, not New York City in the Marvel stuff. You know, you're not Spider-Man, you're Batman, who sometimes takes things a little bit too far in the spirit of, you know, winning. Mm-hmm. And the Punisher, as an example, I thought that that was kind of interesting that it was like chaos, essentially, within that. I mean, it's funny, all this dark element stuff that comes into play exists, but really the Marvel counterpart for this character would be like Electro in the Marvel universe, where you have these electric powers. You know, obviously, you see the bad version of him. You have the opportunity to be the good guy, the Static Shock, the, you know, whatever you want to be with the electrical power. So I think that that was really neat. One of the games that didn't get mentioned as a game that came out before this that I think, even if it didn't negatively maybe change the perception of Infamous itself, I think that just from a marketing standpoint, if you were to look at the covers of these games or look at trailers, it's like electrical powers. The Force Unleashed was a game that came out where you are playing as like a Sith apprentice with, and everyone knows, if you know Star Wars, the Force electricity, the Force lightning that you get is like a very iconic high-level Sith power that you end up using in that game. And so to see a guy, the sort of dark aesthetic, he's got the electricity powers. It's like, well, this game, you know, that came out already a little bit before that. And then that's not even on top of the other ones. I mean, you can look at gameplay footage if you haven't played this game, and you can look at Crackdown footage, very similar ways of running around the city. I think Crackdown is a little bit more over the top, where you can like jump crazy high and do that kind of stuff. I think Assassin's Creed is a little bit more unique. That was another comparison that got drawn versus Infamous. But I think that there were a lot of similarities within this game, you know, and then you have Prototype on top of that. That makes a game like this really difficult, I think, to find mainstream success, which it was still, I think, able to do. But I also understand where this game kind of fizzled out with some of those ideas while being really, really cool, I think, if you actually play Infamous, not necessarily being big draws for people that that were on the fence about getting it.
And this was the era of, like, I'll call it transitional gaming. It is technically next gen, but until you get to, like, that next generation of movement and play and how you can tell a story with it, it's just unfortunately falling under those, like, AA games. And it was so much fun. The movement was great. The gliding along, like basically like the, you know, upper subway rails that you had, the rail system was such a cool way to do it. And to use these powers and to like pull power from the city to kind of replenish yours was such a smart, unique way of doing it. And I like that they had so much playtesting built in of like, hey, let's let you buy whatever powers you want whenever. Well, that makes telling the story and like needing to have specific powers in certain instances kind of improbable. And it would just be so like, it takes you out of the element in video games when it's like, you can't do this yet because you haven't unlocked XYZ. And it's just like, oh, okay, let me grind for a bit, I guess, and then I'll unlock that. Then I can do the story mission. And so that's just not fun. And so I love that the idea of it and the idea of like, hey, you're discovering this as your character is because they're brand new to this. They just got these powers, so they're developing them. They're trying it out. They're testing features. see what they can do. And so I think it's so cool to see you and your character evolve with that in this origin story versus a lot of the other ones that we've seen in the earlier Spider-Man games, this other stuff that we already know this character. Here's a brand new one we don't know that you're going to kind of mold and shape based on the choices that you want them to do. And I think that's such a good mixture, especially in this era of choice-based games. We're starting to get a lot more Dragon Age into Mass Effect, into a lot more of these other choice-driven games. And this is kind of in that culmination of the start of it where, yes, there is some stuff that influences it. Some of it is going to kind of go no matter what to keep, you know, because it's so hard to do branching paths this early on. But it is so cool to see how this built up into later games, taking the same idea and kind of running with it.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, with the games like Spider-Man, with those characters that are already established, you know the lines that they're not willing to cross. So when you get into those missions, there's one option. There's not any sort of choice. It would be great. I haven't played Spider-Man 2 yet, so of course I say that not knowing what happens in that game, but it would be great to have those sort of things happen within a Spider-Man game where it's like, did you save this character? You know, do you have the Gwen Stacy moment where it's someone dies because you messed up in a mission or something like that, or you made a different choice in a mission? You know, I think that those options exist for video games and for established characters, but I also think that while we had that era of choice-based gaming, there was also a huge buildup of overall narrative gaming, where it's we want to tell a big story, we want to do a trilogy of games, we want the entire path of everything to exist the way that we want it to, and it'll pay off for people, but you don't get a lot of freedom within it. You know, think about it as a really in-depth film. And that's where I think a lot of the, you know, rumor mill started about this is we're going to get this as a movie or whatever.
Sure.
Infamous, though, not caring about those things and saying, hey, we still want you to build your own narrative within this. I think they did such a great job just thinking about the actual perspective. What would happen real life right now, real world? One of us became a superhero. What kind of things would really happen? What would it be like walking around in a city where people aren't just like, oh, hey, Spider-Man, it's great to see you. And Marvel and DC will tease little things like that, but they move on from them pretty quickly.
Sure.
Whereas in Infamous, it's a large part of the decision-making process in the story. And I think that that's where it's really rewarding. You know, and we talk about Crackdown, of course, I think is more of a arcade-y style game. So I don't think you could really take any of that narrative seriously. When you think about Assassin's Creed, there's really, especially in that first one, a good guys, bad guys scenario. You are Desmond Miles, you know, living through Altair, and you are only there to do the good guy things, you know. Go from being a bad guy to a good guy. This gave something totally, totally unique. Sad that this series hasn't had another release. I mean, I don't know if this game, without some massive revamps, could be successful today, but I think that the mentality they had going into this definitely could be. And of course, we've had a ton of great PS exclusives by this studio. They did Ghost of Tsushima, so it's not like they totally disappeared. Would love to see them do more. 8 out of 10 for me. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Whether we get some spiritual successor or just the idea of bringing back a mixture of the arcadey fun fight styles of games with this, with a cool story that builds into it, with a unique story. Yes, origin story's been done to death. But I like the idea of like, hey, this was never meant to truly happen. This was more so for this to be. And heroes don't exist in this world. It's a regular world. This is not a real thing. This is the first time it's ever occurred. And it's just such a cool way of telling it. So yeah, I really enjoyed this game when I played it. Still have it on my PlayStation. Love to play it. But I give it a rating. I would give it... the joy of taking out like a nice sheet of cookies.
Mm.
It fills that aroma up. Delicious. I don't know if that doesn't happen in the game, but this is just what's, I want cookies right now. So we're going to take that. Take it in. Take that sensation in.
I like it.
Divide it by the terrible feeling of, you know, when you unplug something from the wall and it's still in the socket a little bit and you actually wrap your finger around to touch the little sockety part guy?
No.
You get that little little shock with it?
I don't.
Because that's how I would probably get my electric powers. That's probably the only time I'd ever like really get into electricity. But then add in the taste of the cookies later, because that's going to overshadow you accidentally like taking and unplugging a thing you weren't supposed to. Out of 10.
Yeah. How do you unplug things that you're shocking yourself so much? I don't think I've shocked myself since I was a child.
Okay, well, congrats. But so, no, it's on accident. It's like, you know, you're pulling it. It's kind of tough to get out. Maybe it's like one of those newer plugs. And like, I don't know, I did it on accident. Well, no, hypothetically, you could do it on accident. I don't know who did it, but hypothetically, it could happen to anyone ever. It could happen.
It could happen. It could. It shouldn't, but it could. Research for this episode was done by Alex Skinnell and Derek Baker. The intro and outro music for this episode was given to us by our friend Evan Barr, and our lovely artwork was provided by Aaron Shattuck.
Beautiful, lovely people, as well as the people over on our Patreon. As you can check us out on patreon.com/finishthefight. We've got some cool physical and digital rewards over there. Want to thank a few select members with Snide T-Bird, Nick Hyman, and Anthony Gooch. Thank you so much for your support.
You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or most likely your favorite podcast listening platform. If you haven't yet, drop us a review. It helps us out a lot. We love to hear from you. Also, we've got in the Spotify, if you listen to us on that platform, Q&As. Where we just do a little fun chat about the episode, and we'd love to see you there.
Absolutely. You can catch us on Twitch. You can see me at twitch.tv/sourman70. That's twitch.tv/sourman70, as well as Derek over at twitch.tv/thebakerman247. That is twitch.tv/thebakerman247.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Discord. There's a link in the description below. It is free to join. We're in there talking movies, talking pets, talking food, talking Infamous maybe, talking some Halo Infinite, things like that. And we'd love to see you there.
Absolutely. With that, this has been our coverage of Infamous. Are there any other kind of hidden gems or any other games that you think deserve a little bit more limelight? Let us know, and we'll do a little digging, do a little research, and see what we can do for next episode. And as we come to a close, as always, I am your host, Alex Kendall.
And I am your host, Tired Dad. Tired New Dad.
This has been
Cookie Craving New Dad.
And as
New Dad.
As we deliver a fresh batch of not sponsored, but could be sponsored cookies. Looking at you,
Betty Crocker. Pieces. Let's go. Oh, Hershey Kisses.
Yes. Anyway, this has been Finish the Fight, a gaming podcast.